Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen, listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
Hey, yo, you knew who we are, but you don't know why we're here. Total opposite. Of course you know why we're here. We are the new Tuesday Night Titans, Pancakes and Power Slams, episode 126. But I do have to say that it's survey time. Did you come here to see all the other Tuesday shows, or did you come here to see the PAP? Survey says, one more for the good guys. Pancakes and Power Slams, we are here, we are live. It is time to go on chat room. It's starting to flood already, and we're going to have a lot of trivia tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. Flavor of the Week this week is going to be, we had a thumbs up. We had a few thumbs up, thumbs down series in the 125 previous episodes we had on Pancakes and Power Slams. But we're going to talk about the Four Horsemen once again. But we're going to talk about which version, which incarnation of the Four Horsemen was the best. So feel free to let us know your thoughts in the chat room or call live 347-884-8452. Log in into the chat room live for trivia. Before I go forward, the past 2.5 years almost, I've really got an opportunity to have some amazing partnerships, some amazing connections throughout the wrestling community, to interview many people, to contact many people, to deal with many wrestlers, with interviews with other websites like WrestlingInc.com, which I write for, and also the Bleacher Report. I've had opportunities to interview people there. I've had opportunities to deal with wrestlers with this show, many wrestlers, and got a big announcement coming up here soon. But I tell you what, there's a promotion, there's a website that is really craving the nation, and that is rearwrestling.net. These few guys here at rearwrestling.net are really, really good-hearted, really, really supportive people. They banded together and they just decided to start a website about a year or so ago, and they already were on a mission. They already had some things going on as far as being excited about wrestling and just really supportive of my work at wrestling.com and had the opportunity to partner with me early in their starting, and use a lot of my articles to really start them off. And they have just skyrocketed as far as just popularity. They got a ton of viewers, ton of readers on the site, of ton of Twitter followers, ton of people on Facebook. And I just, I tell you what, I'm a very busy guy managing my own website and writing for four total wrestling websites. Well, the Beats Report, I write more than wrestling, but mostly wrestling. But I tell you what, I have to make time out to do a favor to WeAreWrestling.net. They are really, really, really cool people, really kind-hearted people, very supportive people. So I'm incredibly grateful for my connection, my partnership with WeAreWrestling.net. So go there. I know there's many, many, many people who listen to the show. I look at the numbers every week throughout all the wrestling outlets. But I tell you what, man, go to WeAreWrestling.net. If you're listening to this show for the first time, 126 episodes in, hopefully you are with us the whole time. But if you're listening to the show for the first time, take your time out after you listen to this show, of course, to go to WeAreWrestling.net, or simultaneously you can look at their website while I am on the air. Actually, you can go to their website and listen to Pancakes and Power Slams live on air. So major, major shout-out to WeAreWrestling.net. Like I said, I write for many websites, but there's something distinctive about WeAreWrestling.net that has given me amazing support. So check them out. Cool people over there at WeAreWrestling.net. Latest news, good editorials there. Wrestling radio is they're starting a distinctive radio section, wrestling radio. So thank you so much for really supporting me. WeAreWrestling.net, and let's keep this partnership going. All right, ladies and gentlemen, 126 episodes, Pancakes and Power Slams. We are here. We are live. You knew the Dusty was going to come out one of these times in Pancakes and Power Slams. You knew it was going to come out tonight because we are here. We are live. We are the new Tooth and Night Titans. We are the Tuesday Night Delight. Derek, so glad to have you as always. Are you ready for tonight, sir?
Am I ready for tonight? I mean, is a child ready for Christmas? Of course. I mean, we got to get this thing going. 126 episodes, yeah. 90 minutes is never enough. That's the motto around here. Love it or leave it. Tuesday Night Titans, the new Tuesday Night Titans. Chris Featherstone and Derek.
Absolutely. Also, a special shout out to all the panelists last week. It was, I'll tell you what, listening to the show, it was a really good show. We got a lot of good feedback for the SummerSlam Roundtable last week. We had, Ryan Fuqua, our host of the Ryan's Den segment here on Pancakes and Power Slams, and we had Andy Socek from What Culture. We had Julio Romano from Bleacher Report, and we had fellow podcaster, host of Clock Radio Speakers, Armand. Six people on the panel last week, and we managed to keep it very civil and very respectful, and we didn't go awry. So it was really good, very good topics. I wish we had a little bit more time to get really into the flavor of the week last week, which was the we all picked the three, our three favorite mid-card matches in SummerSlam history, which was really good. So I wish we had a little bit more time, but like Derek says, every week, 90 minutes is never enough. So let's start with our first trivia question for tonight. The first trivia question is, what former TNA World Heavyweight Champion hails from Green Bay, Wisconsin? You can't say it, Derek. Of course, yeah, you're itching at every week, every time I say it, you're just itching to say the correct answer, but 126 episodes, somehow you still don't get it. But but of course, how we do at Pancakes and Power Slams, we give the chat room the first dibs to trying to answer the question correctly. And if for some reason the chat room cannot answer it correctly, Derek has the rights to answer it and steal the answer from the chat room. Or if someone wants to call live or bold enough to know that they have the correct answer, the number to call live is 347-884-8452. Before we go to Raw, I'm going to announce this again on the show, but because of the popularity of Pancakes and Power Slams, we have been blessed enough to get some people who wants to jump on board, contacted some people, and they're more than happy to be a part of the Pancakes and Power Slams craze and be a part of the interview series. So in the previous nearly 2.5 years, we've had Pope, Elijah Burke, we've had Crimson, we've had Onyx, we've had, I know I'm missing someone, Caprice Coleman, and my boy Tyler Rex, all part of the interview series. So without further ado, I'm going to announce one person today. We got a nice group of people, and we actually partnered with a very, very popular independent wrestling promotion. And so we're definitely going to have some announcements about that soon as far as a string of interviews coming up soon. But the first interview, mark your calendars, September 9th, 11 p.m., my boy from Ring of Honor, none other than War Machine's own Hanson. War Machine's own Hanson will be on the show here live. I always called him the lost member of the Wyatt family, so I'm really excited to interview Hanson. War Machine is one of the hottest tag teams in wrestling right now, period. Unfortunately, Raymond Rowe, I also contacted him. He wants to be on the show, but he unfortunately had a surgery last week, so he's going to recover, and we'll have Raymond Rowe on the show soon. He definitely wants to be on the show. He's excited about being involved with Pancakes and Power Slams. But Hanson will be on the show on September the 9th. Again, mark your calendars, Tuesday, September the 9th. Hanson will be on the show. Shout out to War Machine and ROH. Next week, be sure to stay tuned. Another announcement for another interview confirmed, and this one is going to be very controversial, so it's going to be very excited. But Hanson will be on the show September 9th. Mark your calendars. All right. Again, the question on deck is, what former TNA World Heavyweight Champion hails from, great job, Ken Kennedy, hails from Green Bay, Wisconsin, or Mr. Ken Anderson, which is his real name, and he goes by that in TNA. All right, let's get to Raw. Start off with the Hall of Fame Forum, and I put this on the Crave Wrestling Facebook page. By the way, if you're not a follower of the Crave Wrestling Facebook page, go there, because seeing how I write for many websites, I have news on my personal Facebook page, Crave Wrestling page, breaking news and some scoops that I get from sources, reliable sources. And so please go there. Some good videos as well, some good trivia as well. So go to the Crave Wrestling Facebook page and, of course, follow at Crave Wrestling. We start off with a Hall of Fame forum with Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, and HBK. Now, call this coincidental, quotation mark, but for some reason, Hogan was, I think Cena's got a chance, I think Cena's going to win. Flair was, Cena's got a chance, but he's not going to win. And Michaels was, no, Cena has no chance, he's not going to win. So I'm quite skeptical about the fact that all three of them had differing opinions, and then it was polled on WWE.com, I'm a bit skeptical with that, and I really think that that was not their specific there probably wasn't their specific views on it, but they're probably forced to believe that all three of them had to have differing opinions. And of course, no sell John Cena. Yeah, he was out for a week after the brutal beating that he had for SummerSlam. But I don't know. I'm just really skeptical on this rise of John Cena again. It just really seems like we're going to have some type of big superpower, rise of John Cena, Super Cena's back from about 07, 06, Super Cena. Oh, I'm not liking it. And he cuts a promo to show how resilient he is. Man, I think this whole segment could have been spared to me. I really found no type of point in it at all. And I definitely don't think that John Cena coming and cutting his promo and giving mad respect to the Hall of Famers, but adamantly disagreeing. What in the world was the point? Please spare me that segment. It was just a waste of time to me.
It was such a waste of time. Pretty much all of Monday Night Raw last night was just about a waste of time. I mean, there was a few good moments. I actually thought, we'll talk about it here in a bit, but the Swagger match was it was pretty good. It was a well-timed, well-thought-out match. We'll get to that in a bit, but Raw was crap last night. Let's just be real.
Yeah, that forum was just... It just made absolutely no sense at all. At least he could have been taped or something. He was just, it was just no type of selling. I mean, you had a brutal beat. You had John Cena have the beating of his life against Brock Lesnar, and to have no type of tape or not have any type of weakness, nothing. It was just Cena back all over again. And we'll talk later about the whole point of Cena and Bray. We'll talk about that later. But it was brutal to me. That segment was brutal.
I wanted
to hear Ric Flair.
Shut up and just listen to Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels talk and Hulk Hogan. I mean, it was that bad. So, I mean, it was a dumb, useless spot, man. So it was horrible.
Yeah. And the bad thing about it, too, was just the Hall of Famers interaction was just cheesy to me. I just, like I said, all three of them somehow mysteriously had differing opinions, and it was polled on WWE.com. Ooh, how coincidental. Yeah, it didn't sell me whatsoever. It was just a waste of time. What wasn't a waste of time was Rusev against Jack Swagger. Man, that match was absolutely awesome to me. Until probably the last 5 minutes of the match. The excessive kicking and stopping could have done away with that. But toward the end, it made Swagger look really weak. But he had so many close calls. Rusev has done a fantastic job selling that ankle. He still sells the ankle, and kudos to Rusev, man. Armand said this on the show last week on the roundtable, and he said this to me before when we've discussed it. Kudos to Rusev. He's done a really good job selling. And for someone who's a rookie in the game relatively, he's getting the selling game pretty good, and he's doing a really good job. So kudos to Rusev. I think he's got a really bright future ahead of him if booked properly. And I think that he's growing. I think that we're seeing the character and the cadences and just the timing of Rusev's matches. We're seeing him grow. Of course, there's some green in him. But just like I said with Roman Reigns, be patient. And he's just not surrounded by his gimmick, which I can respect. But, yeah, give him some time to grow. I think we can see a legitimate top heel in Rusev, and I like it. And I think that even if they do away with so much of the Russian-sympathizing Vladimir Putin, I think that Rusev will still be a strong heel even without Lana saying so much about that. I think just with the attitude and just with the type of brawly heel that Rusev is, they don't have to emphasize that so much. And even if they kind of transition away from that, I still think that he'll be a strong heel. And I like it. But the problem is with that, like I wrote on Bleach Report today, what in the world is next for Jack Swagger? Of course, we're seeing some Bo Dallas involvement. I don't want to see a Bo Dallas and Jack Swagger feud. I have no interest in that whatsoever. And it's really sad because, man, this feud could have catapulted Jack Swagger to the nth degree. And he was so close of winning the match last night. But just to get a TKO finish and, man, it's really, really rough for Swagger. And I don't know if we'll see any type of rebound as far as him being a legitimate top babyface.
No. I would agree that match was just absolutely phenomenal from beginning to the almost end. Like you mentioned, it was like just the essence of a wrestling match. It was so exciting, just the back and forth. I want to weigh in on Swagger with Bo Dallas. That makes no sense. It's ridiculous. I mean, in real life, Swagger would absolutely smash Bo Dallas. There's just no way. And the Dallas character is still not really grown on me. He's still sweet and charming, but it's getting old. Do something with it quick. I mean, they showed a heel turn not too long ago, or what could have been, and they haven't really done anything with it since. He's still a lucky charm. So I'm going to agree that the match was great. Swagger has so much that they could do with him. But, yeah, they just didn't give him that little piece that he needed to kind of propel himself.
I wonder if they are booking – I wonder if they – with the kick that Rusev gave Zeb Coulter, I wonder if that's an actual write-off as far as Zeb Coulter is concerned. And if that's the case, why in the world would they do that? Coulter is a fantastic mouthpiece to Jack Swagger. And, of course, it was more of a heel role. But he's still fine as a face because here's the thing. There's so many different ways that Coulter can still be used as a babyface that would work. And the easiest way is just to go through a string of heels and say, hey, this isn't we the people. This isn't the American way. You're judging, you're doing this, and you're saying this, and, you're taking away the freedom, blah, blah, blah. That's not we the people. We have the freedom to say whatever we want. That's we the people. And, of course, people will get behind that. But at the same time, they aren't using Coulter for Swagger, and Swagger needs Zeb Coulter. I think he's trying to survive by himself as a face. We the people's a catchy phrase, but as we can see, it's just not working. It didn't work, and it didn't work when he was by himself before. Him with Coulter was the best thing his career could have had, but for some reason, WWE is not really using that as a catapult to his character. Man, this guy can be such an amazing upper mid-card babyface. Why not put the U.S. title on him? Wouldn't it make sense for someone who's representing the U.S. with a flag saying "We the People" actually be the U.S. champion? It would make much sense for that to happen, but unfortunately, we are not seeing that. Next trivia question on deck. Who managed the Red Rooster when he was a heel? Who managed the Red Rooster when he was a heel? Next, we have Cesaro defeating RVD. Yeah, I mean, you know, this was expected. I didn't see anything. I definitely didn't see RVD winning this match. It was the number one contender for the U.S. Championship, and RVD is reported to be gone after the SmackDown tapings tonight. He's going to be gone. So, RVD, he came and he gone. He had a couple good matches with Seth Rollins, but RVD's run in the WWE this time was not good.
It wasn't the best, and as you know, kind of sad to say, no more RVD, Mr. Monday Night. I remember when he first broke into WWE after the what was the invasion they called that? I mean, that was just sweet to see. It was like a breath of fresh air. Rob Van Dam, I mean, he was exciting, very. Still, nobody kind of moves like him. I mean, he's kind of lackluster now, and I understand that, but he's still got legs. He can still go. I'll always be an RVD fan, but, you know, I hope to see him again soon.
The problem with this run from RVD is it was totally without direction. There was absolutely no direction with RVD's run. At least when he came back last year, he was in the Money in the Bank, and then, you know, he feuded his biggest feud during his run was against Alberto Del Rio, and he still had, I think it was Night of Champions last year when he actually had a World Heavyweight title match against ADR, and it was a decent feud. Both of them can wrestle. Both of them are good in the ring, and it worked. It was good. I don't know about Ricardo Rodriguez going with RVD. That was a bit off. But at least he had direction. At least he had a feud last year. This year, he was wrestling this person on Main Event. He was wrestling this person on SmackDown. He was in this match on Raw. It was absolutely no direction whatsoever. And so much to him and Cesaro having a match at a pre-show at SummerSlam. No build to it, no backstory to it, and as many of us, I think just about all of us agreed last week on the panel, that it just didn't make any sense to be on SummerSlam, even on the pre-show. And I don't know, I'd be totally okay if we don't see RVD again. I would be okay if we don't see RVD again. Unless he had some type of direction, if the World Heavyweight Championship was still around, I'd even be okay with the RVD World Heavyweight Championship run if booked properly. But there's no point. There's no point for him to win a mid-card title. There's no point for him. He definitely won't be the WWE World Heavyweight Champion. So if you had the opportunity, when RVD decides to come back, how would you book RVD, Derek?
I would book RVD on a. It just depends what RVD can still go. I mean, if RVD was at his max and he wasn't somewhat lackluster like he has been compared to his previous times, I'd put him up for a United States Championship. I'd put him up for maybe a teaser of IC, but again, you just want to see how that goes. I mean, he would be a great Intercontinental Champion. I mean, just. I would like to see that on him, but still see him perform, you know, the way that I know he can. And, again, I wasn't totally not impressed with the way he currently moved and did his things. But, yeah, I mean, I could see just, like, oh, he was almost there for the page. He had no direction, that's the thing. He had really no purpose to be there when he should have been there and he should have been built better, but that just didn't work. But, a lot of things aren't working these days in WWE. And I think recently, Ryback's not coming back for a while or so. I mean, it's...
Yeah,
these people, if they can do something with, they don't.
Yeah, he's taking care of some personal problems. You know, best wishes to Ryback, and that he gets everything together. But his time in the WWE the past couple of years have been relatively forgettable, to be honest with you. It just, he had his big rush October of 2012, and then the Shield really buried Ryback when they came in and powerbombed him through a table, and then after that, just didn't make any sense. It just kept burying him more and more, and he just never recovered. I mean, even when he turned heel, they had the nerve to put him against Cena a few times, but that didn't do anything to his character. And so, I think face Ryback is the way to go. I think the Feed Me More is still catchy, and I definitely think that if they bring him back as a babyface, I totally think that he'd go over. And here's the thing, man, the WWE has such a weak list of babyfaces right now. I mean, a weak list of babyfaces. If you think about it, you have John Cena, who's just the resident babyface, which isn't really a pure babyface because he gets as much heat as he does pops. But Daniel Bryan, he's out. He's advertised for November, but most likely a non-wrestling role because the latest is that he has to get Tommy John surgery. So he probably won't be cleared to wrestle until around Mania. So that's, you know, what, 8 months away, 7 months, a little over 7 months away. And so after that, you have Ambrose, who the WWE reported, so it's been reported in many outlets, the WWE isn't really high on Ambrose as far as being a top guy, so he's going to wallow on the mid-card. And plus, he doesn't have, as much as I like Ambrose, that's your boy, you used to wrestle with him, as much as I like Ambrose, I don't think he has the main event look. I mean, it's hard to say that, but every time I look at Ambrose, I think of Brian Pillman. I mean, he has that Pillman, Piper, Jake Roberts feel to him. And all three of those names really made their impression in the mid-card. None of them were ever world champions in the WWE. And Piper had an Intercontinental Championship run. And Roberts never had a title. Pillman never had a title in the WWE. So, a singles title. None of them, except for Piper, had a singles title, and Piper had the Intercontinental title once. So as much of an impression that they are, two of them are Hall of Famers, and I'm sure Pillman will be in the Hall of Fame soon. I'm sure that Pillman should be in the Hall of Fame in the WWE. Two of them Hall of Famers, all three of them may be in there, but none of them were main event guys. I mean, it's tough to say that, but none of them were main event guys. And I see the same thing with Ambrose. It's sad to say, but I just don't see Ambrose as a world champion. And especially with the tank top and the jeans. I mean, first of all, and the music is okay, but they just really have to repack. If they really want Ambrose to be a main event guy, they have to repackage him. It makes sense now just because he's more of a lone wolf, lunatic fringe is what they call him. But if they really want him to be a championship guy, they really have to repackage the guy. And so there's not a good list of baby faces right now. And I definitely think that if Ryback was inserted, of course you have Sheamus. Sheamus is a solid wrestler. He's starting to get a little bit in the stale boat a little bit. I like Sheamus a lot, actually. I think he's one of the most solid wrestlers on the roster. But the fans really aren't. He's not very over as a babyface. So I think Ryback would work. So hopefully they bring him back as a babyface. It's needed. Of course, you have Big Show and Mark Henry, but they're on their way out. They've been in the company for 18 years now. Well, 18 for Henry and 15 for Show. So, just a weak list of babyfaces.
Weak list, yeah. And who knows when we're going to see Ambrose next. So, I understand the comment. I understand that I can see that. That's a good analogy as far as Jake the Snake Roberts and him goes and everything. But, I mean, he's going to be a solid performer. He's going to be great. I mean, we'll see what happens in the future. And as far as baby faces go, they don't. I mean, they really don't have much of anything right now. And, I mean, that's sad to say. And what's even worse is it's been like 3 weeks since we've seen Fandango. I mean, give me a break. We
oh,
all need
goodness. He's the new face, isn't he? Fandango's the new face of the WWE. He's going to be the number three face behind Cena and Reigns.
There we go. And oh yeah, Bobby the Brain Heenan is the answer to the trivia question.
Yes, indeed. I'll give you that because it's I haven't seen it in the chat room or I haven't seen it on Twitter. So I'll give you that. Yes, you are correct. Bobby the Brain Heenan was the manager of the Red Rooster while he was heel and treated him like crap. It was a very interesting run by Red Rooster. Real quick, like I said, the flavor of the week is the Horseman, which was the best version of the Horseman. Do you think that Terry Taylor would have been a good Horseman?
He could have been. He was a lot of things. The Red Rooster, the absolute worst gimmick. I mean, he just sat there and, like, jerked his head back and forth. It was kind of ridiculous. He could have been. I could see Terry Taylor having if Mongo McMichael was a member, anybody could be a member. So, I mean, that's a great flavor of the week topic. Stay tuned. 347-884-8452. Pancakes and Power Slams is on live right now. It's
absolutely
live. Tuesday night.
It is live. Terry Taylor would have been a good Four Horsemen member to me. I when I look at Terry Taylor, he has the old school look, the red tights. He was the man in Mid-South, and I think it would have worked. I think he could have had the Tully Blanchard feel to him when he had his heel run when he turned against a gentleman Chris Adams in the Mid-South. I definitely think that it would have worked around that time. Someone else, I think it was someone else I had in mind as far as it could have been a good Horseman. Maybe Chris Adams. Maybe, I don't know, maybe he would have had the Paul Roma feel to him. I think that maybe, what do you think about someone like a Steve Williams, Dr. Death?
Dr. Death would have been great. I mean, he would have been more of like a replacement for Ole. Now you really think about it, just the aggressive style and the stature and the big build that they both had. That would have been great.
Dr. Death was one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I was a huge Steve Williams mark back in the late 80s, early 90s. I was a huge Dr. Death. In the Oklahoma Stampede, he picks you up for a body slam, and then he bumps you on the corner and comes out and does a power slam. The Stampede tremble that he would do. Man, I'm so upset that Steve Williams wasn't pushed as much. I mean, he was UWF World Heavyweight Champion when Bill Watts owned the UWF and Mid-South. When Mid-South became UWF, he was the world champion UWF, but, I mean, that's as much as you got as far as Dr. Death Steve Williams. Him and Terry Bam Bam Gordy had a good tag team. They were NWA tag team champions, and they were Gordy and Dr. Death just ran over Japan. They were really, really good. They had some of their successful years in Japan, actually. But in the States, Dr. Def was just he was on a winning streak for a long time in the States, but it wasn't really recognized because he wasn't pushed as being a top guy anywhere, except for, like, the UWF, like I said. But Dr. Def would have been a very interesting horseman. He was part of the varsity club, and it worked then. But he would have been a very, very good horseman. All right, let's go to Paige defeating Natalia. I think it made sense. I mean, Natalia beat Paige twice. Then AJ comes out, distracts Paige, hugs her, and then kisses her hand. I don't want to see another Paige versus AJ match at Night of Champions. I would much rather for it to be a triple threat, especially since, I tell you what, Natalia will just continue to get the shaft as far as being the Divas champion. She's the best wrestler on the roster, but for some reason gets the short end of the stick every single time. Even beating Paige twice really doesn't mean much, because unless you insert her in the triple threat match, which she's not going to win, man, I feel sorry for Natalia because I'm sure that she's doing a really good job training the Divas, training the new Divas, and just really doesn't mean much on TV.
It doesn't mean much. And, again, that was kind of a wasteful match. And you get to see AJ and Paige kiss and hug or whatever. That's just weird and it's awkward. I don't know. I mean, WWE could do a lot better, and Natalya always gets the short end of the stick. We're tired of seeing that. But really, she could legitimately probably take both of those on at the same time. So a triple threat match would be in the But, again, it was just filler. I mean, Monday Night Raw, what's best for business? Nobody was there last night that you really wanted to see, other than Shawn Michaels and Hogan and Ric Flair, of course.
Yeah. And who really wanted to see that? I mean, the nostalgia factor was cool, but
yeah, that was about it, though.
Yeah, that really was. They really didn't have a relevant role at all. And I mean, Orton wasn't there, Lesnar wasn't there, Heyman wasn't there, Ambrose wasn't there. So yeah, it really didn't make
Triple
a big. Yeah, Triple H and Stephanie, no show. Both of them. So, it was a weak Raw. Next trivia question is who was the shortest reigning? This is a tough one. Chat room, let me know what you got. Let me see your skills. Who? We already did the Red Rooster. Who was the shortest reigning U.S. champion ever? Ooh, dun dun dun. Who is the shortest reigning United States champion ever? Chat room, Twitter, call in live, 347-884-8452. Let us know your skills. Who is the shortest reigning United States champion ever? Next, we get to the longest reigning United States champion in WWE history, which is Dean Ambrose. We have a eulogy conducted by Kane and Rollins, and all of a sudden we get an interruption by Roman Reigns, and then we get some type of interaction. I'm okay with Rollins versus Reigns. I'm okay with it. It makes sense. They both, you know, Rollins hit Reigns with the chair, left the Shield. Rollins and Reigns were tag team champions. Makes sense. I'm okay with the Rollins and Reigns feud. Even if Rollins loses against Reigns, it really doesn't matter because he has the Money in the Bank briefcase. He has his ace in the hole, so to speak. So, and plus it'd do nothing but push Reigns even more. And to be honest with you, I definitely think that Reigns and Rollins would put together better matches than Reigns and Triple H. Now, granted, Triple H is a very Harley Race style, you know, solid wrestler. I see Triple H is like a merge, like a blend between a Harley Race and an Arn Anderson. More on the Arn Anderson side, because I mean Harley, you know, you worked with Harley. Harley trained you, but I just as much as legendary as he is, man, that guy couldn't wrestle.
Oh, he was a brawler. He was just a tough brute. Yeah, he could wrestle. Are you kidding me? Tell that to his face and he'd punch you. I mean, he was
I think I could take Harley, to be honest with you.
He just, he was tough. That's it. He didn't have to say much. He just had direction. He was a general, was more what he was. He could wrestle. He could brawl. He was just a tough guy, but he made it believable. That's what I loved about him. The tattoos up his arms. I mean, he did a lot of things that nobody hit the ropes like he did. I mean, he just kind of laid his arms across it and went backwards. And Harley Race, I mean, he was a general. Triple H, I see a lot of attributes in him. Even Ric Flair said that was the toughest guy he's ever been in the ring with, hands down. And you can see that.
I can see the toughness in Harley Race.
Give me a break.
But he wasn't a wrestler, though. He couldn't wrestle. I mean, he was a brawler. I understood that. Harley Race sold very good. He was a fantastic seller. I will give you that. But he would just flop on the ropes, and I liked that. But the kamikaze headbutt that Harley Race had, I'm gonna call it the night and day headbutt, because he would get up on that second rope, he would stretch out his arms, and that transition from the ropes to hitting the opponent just seemed like it was a 12 to 18 hour span. It was so slow when he would fall on his wrestler, and he did it. It was just so much slow motion about Harley Race. But you know, he was definitely one of the best champions ever as far as just his popularity and just, you're right, he was a tough brute, man. I'll definitely give him that. His mic work was suspect, but Harley, okay, so you're going to defend Harley Race's mic work?
Oh, it was what it was. But
what does that mean? It was what it was. What does that mean?
That was before they had to cut so many promos, and you know that wasn't like today. The promo was pretty much all that matters. Back then, not so much.
No. I totally disagree with that. The merch is what matters now. You get the merch, you get the catchphrases, you get everything. It's so much easier to be a bad promo cutter now than it was then. Your promo was your merch back in the mid-80s. Man, there was not as much exposure. If you were not very good on the mic, you didn't have much of a shot. Someone like a Manny Fernandez, so to speak. Man, he could have been some type of Latino superstar. But, I mean, he was really good, too. He was a really good wrestler. And when he tag-teamed with Rick Rude, when they were with Paul Jones, it worked then because Paul Jones was a mouthpiece. But Manny Fernandez by himself, he wasn't the best promo cutter. He was an excellent hand in the ring, but he wasn't a very good promo cutter. All the good promo cutters were the stars. You had your Tully Blanchards, your Arn Andersons, of course, Ric Flair. You either was a good promo cutter or you were chiseled out of stone. Those were the two main characteristics of top guys. Nikita Koloff, he had both. He was chiseled out of stone, and he was good mic work, because he made people, guys from Minnesota, and, well, he spent a lot of his life in Minnesota, but he made people believe that he was actually from Russia. And kudos to Koloff for doing that. But those were the two biggest sellers, your physique or your mic work. Someone like Nature Boy Buddy Landell, who didn't have a good physique and he was decent on the mic, that's the reason why he didn't stand out as the Nature Boy, because he had many similarities like Ric Flair, but he never was over because he had none of those. So I disagree with the mic work. The reason why Harley Race got over because the reason why he got over was because of the fact that he was the guy. Like he was picked. He was such a brawler in the ring, and he was a heel. So a heel can cut a very grungy, gritty promo, and it would work. I mean, that's what happened with Harley Race, because he was that guy. He was that really brawly, gritty type of guy. And so his very methodic and monotonous promos, it worked because it fit his character. That didn't say they were good, though, but it worked for his character.
Kabuki!
Right. The bounty. Paul Jones! Kabuki!
I don't know. I love Harley Race. I always will. On a personal level, and just, I always know who he was, and I always knew he was this larger-than-life figure that, you know, I didn't see him in his heyday. I didn't. That was back in the 70s, early 80s. I mean, I saw a brief glimpse of it. But when he went to the WWE, I mean, obviously they killed his character, called him the King. He wore pink tights. It was ridiculous, but...
Yeah. Perfect.
It was, yeah, Harley Race... Cool. Wow, that dude! Harley Race, woo!
They did indeed kill his character when he was feuding with Dugan. We haven't said that in a while. We're going so far off of Raw, but this is great because Raw was horrible. But for those who are new listening to the show. Derek and I, we've got, you know, about 60 years combined of pro wrestling expertise and experience. So there's a lot that we do, and there's a lot of inside things, and we followed the we're very knowledgeable in World Class and UWF and AWA, you name it, NWA, just watching tapes all the time. And there was a time that we watched the UWF. I have the Mid-South DVD, and I went over to Derek's place, and we watched it. And it was the announcers back then, because Hacksaw Jim Duggan was one of the top baby faces in Mid-South. And they announced Duggan as Hacksaw – well, I don't think it was Hacksaw at the time – they announced him as Jim Dugan. That was his name in Mid-South for a while. They called him Dugan. And we just thought that was absolutely hilarious, that it's clearly Duggan. I mean, even if you pronounce it, there's two G's in his name. So it just phonetically, it just Duggan is the way to go. But the announcer... Jim Dugan. It was absolutely hilarious. And so every time, you know, we'll just randomly say Dugan, and that's exactly because of that. Just the name Dugan, it just sounds funny, and it was totally pronunciation of his name. And Dugan just sounds up. Funny, yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous. So, when Harley Race was feud against Dugan, they really messed up his character at the time. When he won the WWE, it had to be more of a money thing and just kind of trying to use whatever type of lasting impression of popularity that Harley Race had. It was toward the twilight of his career, so. Reviving him as King Harley Race, that was trying to get some type of you know, draw from him. It worked. The feud with Dugan was decent, but it definitely was a mid-card feud. He wasn't a main eventer by any stretch.
Boy,
all right, back
to Raw. WrestleMania 3.
Yeah. Yeah, his feud with JYD was... His feud with JYD was pretty good, too, which is another guy who just, I mean, he was the man in Mid-South, too. And just for the WWE just to make him a simple mid-carder, there's no way that JYD should have been the first black NWA champion. And no disrespect to the first black NWA champion, but the first black NWA champion was R-Truth. When he was Ron the Truth Killings back in 2002, I believe it was, or 2003. And,
Ron
yeah,
Simmons.
I mean, well, he was the first black WCW champion. He wasn't the first black NWA champion. And Simmons won the title, what was that, 92 that he won it? Or 91?
I think it was when it was still NWA. Maybe not.
No, I think Turner bought NWA in 91.
Okay, yeah.
And it became, I think it was 91 when it became WCW, when Turner bought it. Actually 88 is when Turner bought it, but it became real big as far as a branding. WCW became like more of a brand in early 90s. But yeah, he was the NWA champion was Ron the Truth Killings when he won in TNA. And so, yeah, but I think JYD should have been the guy. I really, really think he should have been the guy. And he was the man in Mid-South, man. I really think that he could have had a really, really good run in the WWE or WCW as world champion. But hey, Ron Simmons was a good choice to be the first black world heavyweight champion. Kudos to Ron Simmons, and that's why he's in the Hall of Fame. So big ups to him. All right, next we have on Raw, Goldust and Stardust defeating the Usos by countout. I think it's safe to say that we have seen a Goldust and Stardust heel turn. Now, it might have been just a matter of just getting a little bit too passionate during the match, but it seemed like it was pretty apparent that we saw a turn by Goldust and Stardust. I like Goldust and Stardust. I don't know how I feel about the turn. I didn't know how I felt about the turn initially, but I just kind of thinking about it a little bit more, it makes sense just because I think that they're the best candidates to be in the title hunt against the Usos, because Rowan and Harper, I'm glad that their match series is over. They had some really, really good matches, and I'm glad that, you know, we're not going to see any more, because nothing really could have topped what we saw at Battleground. But I definitely think that Goldust and Stardust as heels, it'll work. They're bizarre characters. They're very eccentric, and I think that it'll work. I think that I'd rather see Cody as a face, but he's not really playing the Cody character, and so it could work. I don't think it'll go back to 1995-96 bizarre Goldust, but I think that them working as heels wouldn't be too much of a difference with them being faces, a little bit more edgier, which I'm okay with. So I think the turn can work.
Yeah, I think it can work, and I don't know if it's so much Golden Stardust going heel, but it's maybe the Usos. Maybe this was like the Usos trying to, they just want to keep the belt so bad that they're just going to fake their way out of anything. And I think it's great for Golden Stardust, because it almost makes them like, okay, they're a legitimate tag team now. I mean, they had the, you know, the great pops and older brothers and everything, but now, you know, they're upset. They really want these titles, and they felt they were got the raw deal, and I think they did. I almost think the Usos are maybe they're WWE's plan for the Usos to kind of become sneaky, dirty people, maybe, or just something about them, because I don't know. It just seemed really – that's how I almost saw it last night, is that Golden Stardust, they want justice now. It's like, hey, we deserve the titles. You've out-wrestled these guys. Now they're going to pull something like this. Are you kidding me? We're going to destroy them. Show them what we're made of. And so the Usos kind of cried baby and walked away. So what do you think?
No, I think because the Usos are such a they're such a babyface team. They have the chant in the beginning. They have the Uso chant. I think that they're a really good, pure, solid face tag team, and I love it. That's why I'm a huge fan of the Usos, because I mean, many people know that I'm a traditionalist, and many people know that I just embrace the face and heel, the clear-cut face and heel. Now, I know that with Austin and CM Punk and the NWO, that kind of broke the barrier when it comes to a pure face and a pure heel. But I still, and I'm okay with that to a certain extent, but I still think there can be a such thing as a clear-cut face. And I think that if someone's a clear-cut, pure face, I think that that stands them out of the crowd, because it's not normal for us to still see pure baby faces. We have the edgy, we have the anti-hero, we have all these types of baby faces that are really heels in nature or rebellious and defined in nature, and that's what gets them over as baby faces. But we don't have a good tag team or a good Steamboat Santana-style baby face. And that's why I like about the Usos so much, is because they come out and they get so many cheers because of their athleticism, because of their in-ring work. Their in-ring work is so good, is so stellar, that they have no choice but to get cheered. They have the high spots, which really helps. And they're big guys. I mean, they're not small guys. I mean, they're a good 240. Both of them is a good, 230, 240. And so that's what I love about the Usos, because they're bigger guys and they still have those type of high spots. That's what's really getting them over as clear-cut baby faces, pure baby faces. And because of that, I love the fact that they are still relevant. They've had, there was a stat that was made on Raw that they're the fifth longest reigning WWE champions in history. I'm all for it. 175 days as of yesterday. So we're approaching 6 months as champions. And I said this. I said this before when they won it right before WrestleMania. I said that the Usos should have a long world tag team title reign. They should. Because that'll bring back the nostalgia, that'll bring back the tradition and the prestige of the tag team titles, and I think that the Usos are perfect people to keep it for a long time. And I loved it. I love the fact that they're doing that. I think that they can go every single week with whatever team you throw in there, the Usos can do it. And I love the fact that they're doing that, just like what they did with Paul London and Brian Kendrick. They had the titles for almost a year, and I love that too. I was a big fan of London and Kendrick. Their music was really awesome to me, but they had a good chemistry with each other that was very unique, and I loved it. So kudos to the Usos, and the turn I'm okay with, just because it gives the Usos a new, fresh competition. With them still kind of playing the underdog role to keep the titles. And I think that's what's really going to help them keep remaining champions, they're playing that underdog role. They played the underdog role against the New Age Outlaws. They played the underdog role against Rybacksel. They played the underdog role against Rowan and Harper. So kudos to them. Next question we have is still, who is the shortest U.S. champion of all time? Come on, chat room, where are you at? Shortest U.S. champion of all time. I think that I might have stumped Twitter and the chat room and asking who is the shortest U.S.
Come
champion
on, chat.
Of all time. Absolutely.
Let's go, chat.
You know Derek? That's exactly why you say it. See, you spit out the answer when you know it, and then we hear "Let's go chat room" when you don't. So I see how it works. The shortest U.S. champion of all. Yeah, now it's the chat room.
This is the most important hour and a half of the whole week. Let's get your stuff together. Let's go chat room. Yay, yay!
Yeah, so now it's a different Derek we hear. We don't hear the, I'm going to say the answer real quick, Derek. We hear the Pancakes
that.
And Power Slams cheerleader, Derek, which I appreciate, but at the same time, you're trying to weasel your way out of this answer. The shortest.
They deserve
it. Okay, so you're. Oh, okay, they deserve it. So now you're going to give them time. I see how it goes in your book. All right, next we have Dolph Ziggler defeating Damian Mizdow.
That was
not
awesome.
Much to say about here. Not much to say about here. This will work. Here's how this would work. If Sandow and Miz were actually a tag team and it was the Miz being the guy and Sandow being the stunt double, if they actually did that more than 1 week, I think it could work. Not really still, but at least it would be something for Sandow. Because these many characters for Sandow, it got old a long time ago. And the guys are just, it's really sad that we're seeing this every week. But the guy is just getting all these random spots. It's horrible. It's absolutely terrible. And Mizdow to me was just, it was a snoozer to me. I couldn't stand it when he came out. And, I mean, it just seems like Sandow, he's even losing his shape. I mean, like, his physique is starting to get, you know, couch potato type. And it just seems like he's just giving up altogether.
Well, he's giving up, but I got to say, I thought it was kind of funny. I really did. I got it. He was mocking the Miz, and Miz was just sitting on the sidelines and chatting. I wrote a line down here. It was one of the funniest things that happened last night. JBL. JBL, the translator, when Sheamus was talking. Remember that?
Yeah.
Wasn't that hilarious?
That was. Yeah, that was quite funny.
Come on, JBL. Usually Jerry Lawler gets the funny quote. JBL and Sheamus were talking, and JBL said, "Hey, I need a translator when I talk to you."
Yeah, but I don't understand the point of the German announcing though. I think it was last week or the week before, the guy was looking at the monitor in the beginning, and the other guy in the German announce team had to like nudge him and tell him to look at the hard camera. And it was absolutely funny. And it was one of those things that he was talking to the monitor that he had on the desk, and he just didn't understand the whole point of live TV, I guess. It was one of those Jim Ross moments when we're live, pal. And I think it was definitely, I don't know, I suppose because of the World Cup, sure makes sense, but yeah, I mean, with the network expanding international, I guess that makes sense too, but I don't know. It doesn't make much sense to me. And what makes even less sense to me is that ridiculous time vacuum of the Nikki and Brie Bella confrontation. Not only was it bad acting, it was totally, totally boring. I was so unintrigued. This feud, to me, this feud had the ability to be good, and every single week it becomes worse and worse and worse. Oh, my goodness. I was just, I really had to, for the Stone Cold Steve Austin was the shortest U.S. champ. Fantastic, fantastic job there. When he lost it to whom? Who did he lose it to? Good job, Cheryl. Are you going to answer? Well, it wasn't Stone Cold Austin. Technically, it wasn't Stone Cold Steve Austin, but I'll give it to you anyways because it was Austin when he lost it to someone special.
Kurt Angle.
And we've already said Austin lost the U.S. title to Kurt Angle. Where'd that happen at?
That was in the United States. So, yeah, that was a great job.
Yeah, I don't think that ever happened. I don't think that ever happened. At a house show? Oh, okay. I missed that one. Sucks that I missed it, man. I'm really disappointed that I missed it. What year was that?
That was 2001.
Oh, okay. So the 2001, the U.S. Championship wasn't even around in 2001. Post March. Oh, okay. It was an house show.
A house show in Utah.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. But it was the shortest. It was indeed Steve Austin lost it in 94 to someone special. He lost it to the Almighty Dugan.
Dugan
at Fall Ball War Games. He was awarded the title at 1994 that Fall Brawl. He was shooting against Steamboat. Steamboat was injured, and Austin was awarded the title, and he lost it to Dugan. The reign actually counts as a legitimate U.S. title reign, but he went against Dugan, and he lost the title at the pay-per-view. Next to that, the next person was Raven. Raven only had it for a day. So, but yeah, great job there.
Exactly.
That was chat room said. Can you believe that? I was a big Duggan fan at the time, but you know, for Austin to have it and lose it at the same pay per view to get awarded. Get awarded the title and then lose to the same pay per view. That was kind of odd, but quite odd. But at the time, here's the thing. At the time, it was more of a character type thing. And although Dugan had it for about close to about 3.5 months, Hacksaw Jim Duggan had it. But, you know, in hindsight, great comment said back then the title meant something. And that kind of lines up to what I'm about to say, because Hacksaw Jim Duggan can say, I had a U.S. title reign. I mean, that was, I'm a Hall of Famer, and the pinnacle of my career was the United States Championship in WCW. So at least he can say that, because he didn't win any title as popular as his character was, he did not win any title in the WWE. That still astonishes me. He never was the Intercontinental Champion or anything. As popular as his character was, that's still surprising to me that some people like Jake Roberts, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and Bam Bam Bigelow, three very, very popular names, never won a singles title. That will forever astonish me. That will forever astonish me. Next we have, the Bellas. Anything on the Bellas?
Oh, the Bellas, yeah, it was boring. Horrible acting, unbelievable. Again, Raw was a throwaway Raw. And what happened after that?
We had Roman Reigns defeating Seth Rollins and Kane by disqualification.
Right.
They tried to do the cinder block thing on Reigns, but he recovered from it. I think that we're either going to see another type of rematch, and I'd be totally fine if we see just plain Reigns and Rollins. But where in the world does Randy Orton get fit in here? Because on SmackDown he was trying to get retribution from Roman Reigns, and then when Roman Reigns beat The Miz in the main event, we had interaction by Orton with Reigns. So it seemed like they were still going to continue this feud, but for some reason we just changed it up, and now it just doesn't seem like Orton has anywhere to go. It doesn't make much sense to me. But I'm okay with not seeing Reigns versus Orton again. I think it was just it should have been just a one-off thing. I don't want to see them feud. I just don't. I think that Orton's match against Reigns brought a lot out of Reigns, a lot of good stuff out of Reigns, which I was totally good with. I think Orton was a very good competitor for Reigns, especially on a bigger stage like SummerSlam. So definitely big kudos to that. But Rollins will pull more out of Reigns too, and I definitely am looking forward to a match between them too. So
yeah.
I don't know. Even the Authority might, knowing the Authority, knowing Kane, he might do like a 3-on-1 handicap match at Night of Champions. Rollins, Kane, and Orton against Reigns.
Yeah, he probably would, and I wouldn't be opposed to that. I really think Reigns going to pull through and be the better man. Again, it was just like, well, why is Kane involved? Nobody wants to see that. It should be between Rollins and Reigns, but it's not going to be. I mean, Rollins has totally succumbed into the Authority now. I mean, he's just he's another pawn. He's almost like another Randy Orton. I don't want to say that, but yeah, Orton's got to play into this somehow, and I can only see Orton, Rollins being a pawn, Kane being a pawn to the Authority, taking over Reigns. Kind of boring.
Why is corporate Kane still around? Corporate Kane is so lame.
He's supposed to be an ugly, disgusting character, and he looks normal. That's not Kane.
Yeah.
It's disgusting. I hate it.
Yeah, I do not like corporate Kane whatsoever, not even in the slightest. Next, we have Los Matadores defeating Heath Slater and Titus O'Neil, a.k.a. Slater Gator. Nothing much here. I think these are just two tag teams who are just lost. No direction.
No direction. Another throwaway match. Another piece of Raw will never get back. Neither really has much going for them, and they don't really deserve to have anything going for them.
Yeah. Bo Dallas defeats Kofi Kingston. Relative squash match. Kofi Kingston, man, this guy, I'm not going to spend much time this week on Kofi Kingston because we don't have much time. But, oh, man, this guy is just so sad. But Bo Dallas bashes Swagger post-match, and then Swagger slams Bo. He gets booed, though. That's the thing with that's the things with these flippant, you know, crowds. Why in the world does Swagger get boos over Bo Dallas, who to me is the most... I understand the Waylon Mercy type of character with Bo Dallas, but he's getting really stale to me, to be honest with you. So, some of the things that he says is quite funny, but his character as a whole, I don't see a push from Bo Dallas. So for him to get booed, I think Swagger, it just didn't make any sense. But from what we see is a Swagger-Bo Dallas feud, I'm just not interested.
I'm not interested at all. I mean, it's Bo Dallas, especially with Kofi Kingston, he's shown us a lot that he hasn't shown us in a long, long time. Not too long ago, a few weeks ago, when he was in the Battle Royal, jumping off rails and just absolutely doing awesome wrestling maneuvers, and just to go back to being Kofi Kingston. It's unbelievable. It sucks. Bo Dallas, it's boring. Nobody's getting into it. He's going to, whatever happened to Adam Rose? As a Bo Dallas, kind of reminds me of an Adam Rose character.
I like Adam Rose, actually. That's my boy. Yeah, I like Adam Rose. Adam Rose, they realized he didn't work, and so he's back in NXT, which I'm totally fine with. NXT is a great stomping ground to really develop, you know, the whole point of develop a new breed of talent. They're doing a fantastic job at it. Bringing Adam Rose up was very premature, and his tag team with Sami Zayn is working, although I definitely think Sami Zayn should be, as a singles competitor, vying for the NXT championship, although I do like Tyson Kidd's new character, and Tyler Breeze is over pretty well. And, of course, Aaron Neville is pretty over, although he's starting to get booed now, too, which is, again, odd and weird. But Adam Rose being in NXT and staying there, I'm totally fine with it because he's still over in NXT. The Full Sail crowd still loves the Adam Rose character. That's what probably kind of nudged WWE to bring him up because he was so over in NXT. But him being in NXT is totally fine. Let him be over. Let him stay over. If you let him win the NXT title eventually, I think that's better for Adam Rose. And Bo Dallas, too. I mean, Bo Dallas was NXT champion. That's who Adrian Neville won it from. But Bo Dallas winning it back, maybe that'll work. Bo Dallas was a different character at the time, too. But I just don't see Bo Dallas having much of a relevance on the main TV stage at all. And then we see John Cena basically beat the snot out of Bray Wyatt. Oh, talk about burial. Talk about bring out your shovel. And then that transitions into a DQ because of Rowan and Harper interference. And then Big Show and Mark Henry comes out. And they end up defeating the Wyatt family. And then Cena takes out the whole Wyatt family. You talk about a new breed of talent, the new faces, the new guy, part of the new batch of the future, to get totally just decimated and walked all over by John Cena just for the sake of making him look stronger for Brock Lesnar. I think that was horrible booking. A terrible job, and oh man, I think it was all bad. I would rather for him to just decimate Kane. I mean, Kane makes no sense. To be honest with you, it'd have been even better for him to beat Rollins, because Rollins is Money in the Bank. A loss by Rollins wouldn't have hurt him, but for some reason they chose the Wyatt family. One of the biggest, hottest commodities of the entire year, the Wyatt family, for Cena to run through. Bad, bad, bad choice.
Horrible choice. Disgusting. Again, Raw made absolutely no sense last night, other than the match between We the People and Rusev. So, let's... take on the Wyatts? I mean, they're supposed to be the hottest commodity as far as heels go, and John Cena just kind of walks over them. It makes Bray Wyatt look that much weaker. It makes them look stupid. There's nothing that made absolutely no sense. And if I was sitting in the boardroom when they made this decision, let's put this on Raw, heck no. There's no way. Are you kidding me? What's the future of the Brays? Because Brays and there's nothing. John Cena just totally destroyed anything that's going to make the Bray Wyatt clan anything great. Disgusting.
Yeah.
Well, Harper, there's nothing else for him. I mean, that's, John Cena conquered you. Everyone else is going to conquer you.
Yeah. Totally a setback for the Wyatt family. All right. We'll, real quick, got a chat room comment saying that it made perfect sense. I understand the whole point of making Cena look strong, but I definitely think the Wyatt family was just a bad idea. Could have been another, could have been someone else, totally. It could have been. But real quick, let's go to the Flavor of the Week. Hardcore Justice with TNA, decent card. Bram winning and Eric Young and Bobby Roode getting dual, more of a draw. They both win, so they both get a shot at the TNA World Heavyweight Championship for this week. Got a ladder match between for the tag team titles between the Dudleys, the Hardys, and the Wolves. As far as ROH is concerned, real quick, fantastic match. Oh my goodness, an excellent match between Jay Lethal and ACH. Fantastic, those are actually my two favorite wrestlers in ROH. So check out that match. Fantastic match. Again, Hansen will be on the show from ROH September 9th. Log that in your calendars. It's going to be a fantastic interview. Also going to be announcement for an upcoming interview. The next person who's going to be interviewed next week, so stay tuned within that. Real quick, we got a couple minutes left. We had many incarnations of the Four Horsemen between 1986 and 1999, 13 years of the Horsemen altogether. Derek, who was the best Four Horsemen in your book?
In my book, it's going to be the original Four Horsemen. I didn't have cable back in the mid-80s and late 80s, early 90s, so I had to go to wrestling magazines, PWI, watch videotapes that my friends would tape, and I get to watch them of NWA wrestling. I would absolutely say the original was my favorite, even watching DVDs, YouTube today. Ric Flair, the Minnesota Wrecking Crew, Tully Blanchard, J.J. Dillon, that was the best. I liked Chris Benoit. He was a great addition. Barry Windham, Sting, Lex Luger, but the best for me was the absolute originals, Four Horsemen.
Well, the Horseman in the Hall of Fame is the one including Wyndham. The Arn, Flair, Tully, and Wyndham incarnation, which I think was a really good one, but I'm going to have to agree with you. I'm going to have to go old school, original Four Horsemen, 1986, Flair, Blanchard, and the Minnesota Wrecking Crew. It's just something about that. It's just something about the look of them. Ole Anderson with just the rugged look. Anderson with a blend between Blanchard and Ole with the technical aspect as well as the ruggedness to him. Definitely a finesse type of look for Tully, and Flair, of course, was the most popular of them all. I got to go with the original Four Horsemen. Thank you all. We're running out of time. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you all who were involved in the chat room. Thank you, everybody, for your comments through our other social media outlets. Again, wearewrestling.net is the place to go for news. Their fan base is just continuing to spread. I write for them gladly. And, of course, BleacherReport.com and also WrestlingInc.com, WhatCulture.com. so many people offering me opportunities to write for them, and I love it because I love writing for wrestling. So thank you, everybody, who's given me opportunities to write for them. And we're going to have a fun 127 episode, 126 in the books. Until next week, thank you all for supporting. Enjoy your week of wrestling. God bless. Daddy loves Elijah. And have a good night. See ya next week, because we're going to get funky like a monkey, live and in living color, if you will. Good night. Bye-bye.